Hi, Janina.
Hi, Emma.
How you doing?
Hi. Not too bad. How are you doing?
I am all right. I've reached the end of this month of hell.
Yep.
By which I had some work to do every single day.
Yeah. This is sorry for the lateness of the episode. It's because it's Women's History Month, and there are like apparently two history women that everyone loves to get to do their events, and Emma is one of them.
Yeah. So. On the upside, if you ever wanted to hear me talk about Roman women, then I'm on every podcast in the world. So, which is nice. It's nice to be liked and wanted.
Yeah.
I'm easily flattered. So. As soon as somebody's like, do you want to come and talk to me? I'm like, yes, yes, I do. Because I like people telling me that they enjoyed my book.
Yeah. But it has meant that you've basically had like two free days this whole month.
Yes.
So.
Yes. But we're here now.
And we are.
We always make it eventually.
We do.
Sometimes there's a bit of a wait, but we always will reappear eventually.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes we slightly drown in other things, and then and then we resurface, and it's.
But it's nice always to come back and be like, you know what? I'm going to talk to Janina about something, and it'll be a nice like couple of hours of just chatting to Janina, and it's nice.
That is nice.
It is nice.
What are we talking about this week?
This week we are answering a question from Maria Weiler or Viola, who asked, "What do they eat in ancient Rome?" So I'm going to tell you all the things they ate in ancient Rome and all the different permutations thereof.
Great. This is excellent. This is an outstanding question for the time because it's something you already know a lot about. So I didn't have to do any research for.
And it contains a lot of, I think, surprising things and also horrible things, which are my favourites.
Perfect.
Yeah. So Janina, I'm going to ask you, when you think about what people ate in ancient Rome, what is the first thing that comes to your mind?
I mean, probably olives. Mm-hmm. I can imagine olives. Something to do with leaves, I imagine, being a thing.
Oh, leaves. Interesting,
I don't know why. I mean, there's leaves in Greek food, right? So maybe I assume that there's also leaves in ancient Roman food.
Uh-huh.
I know that it's nothing like what people eat in modern-day Italy, because what people eat in modern-day Italy sprang up after World War II and doesn't really date that back that far, really.
Yes. Most of what modern Italian food is very World War II, and all of it is post Age of Expansion, very influenced by New World foods. So there is not a single tomato in any Roman food.
Uh-huh. Because tomatoes didn't exist there at that point in time.
No Roman ever ate a tomato. They just literally did not know that tomatoes existed.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when I think about this, and like no person for many thousands of years in Europe knew that a tomato existed.
Yeah, I love this stuff. It's like how there used to be a third thing on the table with salt and pepper in England, and no one knows what it is.
Yeah.
All of these like decades of English history were filled with this third condiment that we now don't know what it is. There's a theory it was mustard, but we don't know.
Yeah, whereas the Romans did have a herb that has been lost because they basically ate so much of it that they ate it out of existence.
Yeah, we tend to picture total destruction of a species of flora and fauna as a modern phenomenon, but people have been doing it forever.
Yeah, they really have.
We love to hunt and eat a thing into extinction.
Yeah, the second that something becomes cool, we will eat the shit out of it. So you didn't say the two things that I thought you would probably say, which are, if you ask most people, they will say dormice.
Uh-huh.
And garum.
I don't know what garum is, and I had never heard of Romans eating dormice before today.
These are the two. Well, dormice are definitely the one that you'll find in like the Horrible Histories version.
Oh, sure. See, Horrible Histories, I think, was not a part of my childhood. I think you can get the Horrible Histories books in New Zealand, but it's not as like, it's not as massive a thing.
Yeah.
So I didn't come across it when I was
growing
up.
Never came. Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea is stuffed dormice are the thing that everybody says that Romans ate.
Incredible.
And yeah, which is immediately what Oliver, who grew up in the UK with Horrible Histories, said when we were talking about this before recording. He immediately said, did they really eat dormice? Which I'll answer in a minute. And garum is famous because it sounds disgusting. It is a fermented fish sauce that Romans put on absolutely everything.
Okay. I mean, a little bit of a fish sauce can do a lot for a soup or something.
It can. And there's various different types of garum that they made. Some, like the best stuff was made. Basically, it has to be made with a whole fish. And so it includes all of the blood and guts. It's not... This is the thing that freaks people out, is it's the whole fish. It's not the whole fish without the guts. It's the whole fish.
Right, yeah.
And so it is the full fish, bones, guts, scales, all of it. And it is either the best stuff is fermented for a very long time in the sun until it kind of breaks down, like the enzymes break it down, and then it is mixed together with some herbs.
Okay.
And then strained a lot. So basically it's just a fish left to rot until it liquefies.
And that's how you get that nice umami.
And that is how it tastes delicious. But if you need it quickly, then you can boil it.
Okay.
And you can chuck the fish in a pan and boil them for a couple of hours.
I like how this feels like, you know how it's the dose that makes the poison. It feels here like it's the amount of time that makes the food poisoning. Like if you eat it too early, it's going to be very bad. You have to give it time for all the E. coli to like arise up and thrive and then die off.
Yeah. And then it's got quite a lot of salt in it. So like most modern recipes, because you'll find 1 billion modern recipes for garum. And they all say this is authentic garum. But even the Romans talk about how there were a million different types of garum. Like Spanish garum is different to Carthaginian garum. And Carthaginian garum made with mackerel is like the fanciest garum. And but you can also get like shit garum, which has been made quickly in someone's kitchen with anchovies. And depending on which sea they come from, they believed made it all taste very different. And so you can get like fancy garum basically, or cheap Sainsbury's own brand garum. Or presumably there were people at home making their own garum and insisting that it was more nutritional or whatever. But yeah, so those are the things that usually come up. Dormice come up a lot because they are weirdly one of the things that is very, very well attested in the Roman world, that people genuinely did eat dormice. The difference is that we think of dormice as being a particular kind of like tiny little dormice.
Yeah.
But they were not the tiny little guys. I'm going to send you a picture of the little guys that they were eating.
Uh-huh.
So they're not like the ones you see in cartoons that are like the size of a thumb.
I mean, it does still look adorable.
It is adorable, in fairness. It does have a tiny little nose.
And big, big eyes and a nice fluffy tail.
Yeah. But this is called the glis, and Romans talk about eating them all the time. They're about 7 inches long, which is not enormous. But they were very commonly eaten by the Romans, but they are they're a delicacy. They are not like everyday food. They are fancy food for fancy people.
Sure.
Because you had to fatten them up, so you couldn't just catch a dormouse like running around. You had to get them from proper breeders who raised them and kept them in special jars. So they would breed them and then put them in jars. And so they're kind of raised like veal is raised. Like,
okay.
So they're kept in a jar and fed in the dark so that they grow fat. And then they are usually stuffed or roasted and eaten as a delicious little delicacy.
Well, I mean, I guess there's no reason to assume they're not delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to eat one.
Would you like to hear a recipe for stuffed dormouse?
Yes. Yes, I would.
So there is this cookbook that survives from the Roman world. It is the version that survives is from the 4th century, but it is thought that it dates back earlier than that. It's called the Cookbook of Apicius, who is a famous guy in the court of Augustus, who ate so much and was so famous for eating and his kind of like being a real foodie. that he killed himself when he had only 10 million sesterces left to spend on food.
Okay, he couldn't face cutting back on
He
on
could
food.
Not face cutting back on anything. And 10 million sesterces is 10 million sesterces. Like, it's not a small amount of money. But he couldn't bear it. But it's named after him because he's the only other guy we know who liked food this much.
Okay.
But this is like a cookbook. Enough. Yeah. So this is from the Apicius cookbook. Mm-hmm. So you take your dormice. Mm-hmm. Okay, the dormouse is stuffed with a forcemeat of pork, so sausage meat basically, and small pieces of dormouse meat trimmings, so stuffed with itself and pork,
mm-hmm.
all pounded with pepper, nuts, laser, and broth.
Laser?
Laser is the lost herb.
Right, okay.
Romans put in everything, as far as we can tell, and we do not really know what it was. There are lots of kind of guesses as to what it might have been, but we do not really know what it was. Mm-hmm. But it's some kind of herb. Put the dormouse thus stuffed in an earthen casserole dish, roast it in the oven, or boil it in a stock pot.
It's nice to know that stock pots have been around for a long time.
Yeah. I feel like you're going to get two very different outcomes, whether you boil it or roast it.
Yeah,
one is going to be...
There's a very different way of cooking.
Yeah. This is an interesting thing with the Romans, is that boiling and roasting really seem to be the two ways that they do things.
Just
and
like my grandma.
Fairly interchangeable. And so a lot of Apicius is like boiled pork, roasted pork, boiled veal, roasted veal. But dormouse is very much in the fancy foods category,
mm-hmm.
of foods. And we can tell that it is a fancy foods category because it is the first thing that is eaten in the Feast of Trimalchio. Do you know of the Feast of Trimalchio?
No, please tell me.
The Feast of Trimalchio is an amazing text. It's so fun. It is part of a book called The Satyricon, mm-hmm. the Satire, by a guy called Petronius. And it is this ludicrous story. We only have a fragment of it, but a large amount of it is fights over who's having sex with different boys.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this guy who is like it says I, so it's supposed to be Petronius or whoever, and his friend causing havoc, running around having adventures and having sex with loads of boys and then falling out over which one of them the boy likes best.
Sure.
And so it's bananas, but in like a real big section is this feast that they go to of a freedman who is like nouveau riche, but is very, 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 very rich, but mm-hmm. tasteless. So
sure.
He is like the Donald Trump of his day. Like, he has a lot of money and he likes gold toilets.
Sure.
And everyone thinks that he is incredibly vulgar and that everything he does is this just stupid display of how much he has no taste. Yeah, and he does this 12-course menu, which is described in detail by Petronius. It's considered to be a satire of Nero and how
okay.
Nero has no taste.
Sure.
But, okay, so I'm going to tell you what the courses are. The first course includes dormice coated in poppy seeds and honey.
Uh-huh.
A thing they also put in virtually everything. So we've got roasted dormice with poppy seeds and honey, which is presented on a gridiron with sausages and damsons, which is brought into the dining room by a bronze donkey who also has a double pannier of olives.
Okay. I think the donkey would have hated that.
Well, it's a bronze donkey. It's a statue of a donkey.
But how is a bronze donkey statue bringing in food?
That is definitely some men dragging a bronze donkey.
It's not a live donkey that's been painted
no.
and forced to cart food around.
There's this whole idea with very upper class dining whereby they will do these theatrical entertainments that like the Tudors did as well.
Mm.
So there's this story of Commodus who as a jape.
Commodus is in Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator.
Yes.
Right.
So the bad emperor guy.
Mm.
He, as a jape, brings out two men with hunchbacks naked and covered in mustard on serving dishes and presents them to people at a dinner in order to make everybody laugh.
Okay.
And everybody is like, what?
But you can't say that out loud because he's Commodus and he will just have you killed.
He will just have you killed. And so, yeah, they do these things where they'll just like bring out spectacular dishes that are quite theatrical and some of them are weird. But he's got a bronze donkey. So course one, loads of olives, sausages, damsons and dormice. And this combination of like meat and fruit mm-hmm. and like sweetness in food is very common. Mm-hmm. So then second course is a wooden hen. And when you lift up the wooden hen, underneath are peahen eggs.
Something like... it's really making you think about the fact that the eggs you eat were laid by a bird.
Uh-huh. And then you open up... when you open up the egg, it's not egg inside. It is, in fact, garden warblers, so birds, cooked in spiced egg yolk.
Wow. That is unnecessarily involved.
It's immediately becoming quite Heston Blumenthal. Third course, this is where we get very Heston, is a zodiacal arrangement of hors d'oeuvres. Mm-hmm. So for Aries, we have ram's vetches.
Okay, what are vetches?
Ram's testicles.
Great.
Taurus is a piece of beef.
Sure, classic.
Gemini is lamb's kidneys.
Okay, fair enough.
Cancer is, it just says a crown, so it's unclear what that one is.
Just a crown.
Just a crown.
Just to eat a tiara.
Yeah. Virgo is the womb of an unfarrowed sow.
Oh, I'm not keen on that. I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah, that is actually something that comes up a lot, is pig uterus.
Wow.
That is something that the upper classes eat a lot of, definitely.
Like, I do believe in the concept of using the whole animal if you've killed one, but there are limits.
Yeah, I remember looking this up once when I was writing about it, because there was a conspiracy theory that Marcus Aurelius killed Lucius Verus, who was his co-emperor, by feeding him the womb of a sow, he cut it in half, but one side of the knife he had put poison on. And so he then gave Lucius Verus the side of the womb that he had cut with the poison side of the knife.
That seems unlikely to work.
I mean, even the source that says it, which says that definitely didn't happen. But I remember looking it up and being like, I wonder if anybody in the world like still eats this. And there are certainly people that did. I remember watching a YouTube video of preparing it. But it looked gelatinous.
Yeah.
This is one of those cultural things whereby something that is considered to be extremely delicious in one culture just absolutely turns people of another culture. But yeah, so that's what you get if you're a Virgo. If you're a Leo, you get an African fig.
Okay, fair enough.
Nicer.
Yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. On Libra, a balance, which had a tart in one side and a cake in the other.
That doesn't seem like balance, but I wouldn't complain if I were a Libra.
No, you wouldn't hate it. A small sea fish on Scorpio.
Mm-hmm. I like how they were too cowardly to just eat a scorpion.
Yeah. I mean, they must have come across scorpions. Evidently, they never thought about eating them. On Sagittarius, a bit disgusting, bull's eye.
Well, that's very upsetting because I am Sagittarius and I don't want to eat a bull's eye at all.
Well, I've not even got food. I've just got a crown as a Gemini. Oh, yeah. No, wait, no. I got kidneys, lamb's kidneys. I totally would eat lamb's kidneys.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So you get a bull's eye, I get some lamb's kidneys. Mm. Capricorn, get a sea lobster.
Okay.
Aquarius, sure. Get a full goose.
Wow.
Which in comparison to Leo, who got a single fig, feels unfair.
Yeah.
And two mullets on Pisces.
Okay. As in the fish, not the hairdo.
Yeah. In the middle of this is a piece of honeycomb.
Okay.
And then underneath them all, once they've all been eaten, there is a hare stuffed with capons and more sow's bellies.
Okay.
with wings sewn onto it.
What? Like, whose wings?
I don't know. Just as a wing tear.
Okay.
So that's the third course. We've got several to go. Fourth course, a whole wild boar accompanied by suckling pigs wrapped in pastry.
Uh-huh.
So a literal pig in a blanket. And filled with live thrushes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That seems upsetting. I don't want there to be live birds in my food. I'm okay with it being cooked birds.
I have a feeling somewhere in the back of my head that this is something that some Tudor monarch also did, would have pies or meat.
It does sound like the sort of thing that Henry VIII would do.
Somebody will write in and tell us who it was.
Yeah.
Okay. Fifth course, more pork. You're gonna note that there is a heavy pork situation happening. This is another hog stuffed with sausages and meat puddings.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth course, a boiled calf wearing a helmet.
Well, what's the helmet made out of?
Ah, so this is part of the theatre because the person who slices it and serves it is dressed up as the hero Ajax. Uh-huh. And he slices it with a sword and then hands it out. So it's supposed to be some kind of reenactment of Troy.
I see. Okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a lot of courses.
It is, and we're only halfway through. This one I think might be my favourite one.
Uh-huh.
A statue of the fertility god Priapus.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know Priapus, you know his enormous penis, like ludicrously enormous. It's the size of a leg enormous.
Mm-hmm.
Whose paunch holds a medley of cakes which squirt out saffron cream when you bite into them.
I mean, sure. That sounds fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Eighth course, an array of chicken. Were deboned, served with pastry-capped goose eggs.
Okay. I have no problem with this.
Mm-hmm. Ninth course, thrushes made out of pastry.
Okay.
Stuffed with nuts and raisins, accompanied by quinces. Sounds delicious, actually.
That does sound delicious.
Tenth course, now we've gone backwards. It feels like we had a lot of pork going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then we briefly got some, like, sweets. And then we had some chicken. And then we had some more sweets. And now we're going back to pork.
Right.
So now we have pork dressed up to look like a fattened goose garnished with birds and fish.
So it's pork that looks like a bird.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. 11th course is water jugs full of oysters and scallops accompanied by snails.
I don't know about the snails. I've never been able to quite get on board with snails, but the oysters, that sounds fine. I have mm-hmm. no problem with this.
And then the 12th course is improvised because in the novel, the dinner goes on for so long.
Yeah, it seems like it would be at least 2 weeks.
I mean, this doesn't even cover all of the stuff that is happening as well. Like, a lot is happening. There's, like, a chase through some baths at some point. Like, a lot goes on in this. So the cock crows for dawn, and so they capture, slaughter the cock, pot roast it, and then serve it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like an unfair punishment for him just doing his job, which was to crow at dawn.
Yeah. But now he is dead.
Sure. And I would eat him, so.
Yeah. I mean, I'd quite how anybody has room for anything else ever again.
Yeah, like, no, I don't think I'd eat him after having eaten everything else that we've heard about, but in isolation.
Yeah. So this is, like, basically a depiction of a vulgar and ludicrous display of wealth mm-hmm. and preposterousness. Like, the whole idea of all of this theatrics and, like, having a wide range of different things all dressed up as other things and things hiding under things squirting out of wherever is all supposed to show how vulgar they are.
Yeah.
And how they are basically morally bad.
That seems a bit unfair. I mean, it's definitely way too much food, but why not have a little bit of drama and, you know, fanciful yes. presentation in your food?
So the upper classes very definitely have this moral divide on food whereby, and you'll still find it today, like, moderation in food or eating plain food is considered to be basically a moral good.
Yeah.
And being too fancy is considered to be a moral bad, which is tied up as well with this idea that because they believe in humours, a lot of them,
mm-hmm.
and they believe very strongly that food and drink produce and change your humours.
Sure.
And that if you mess up your humours, then you'll have bad health and it'll be your own fault.
Right.
So
it's not that different to how people judge and shame people around food today. It's just the rationale is different.
The rationale is different, but they do very strongly believe, like, there's this book called On the Properties of Food by the Dr. Galen,
mm-hmm.
who is Marcus Aurelius. It's just a Marcus Aurelius heavy episode today. He's Marcus Aurelius's doctor, and he writes all this stuff about how different types of bread will produce different humours in your body, and you don't want to produce thick humours.
Uh-huh.
And how you will need to eat foods that cut through different humours in order to make them lighter. And yeah, and how the working classes are allowed to eat bad food because they work, so they can work off the thick humours. But those who don't work shouldn't have thick humours, so they should have nice food.
It's nice that the lower classes get some reward for their labour, which is that they get to eat pastries whenever they want, I guess.
Yeah, they do get to do that. And they do love a pastry. The Romans. The Romans have a real sweet tooth. And so it is kind of sad to me that they also never ate sugar.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had plenty of honey. I bet the honey was very good.
The honey was great. And they put honey in just about everything that they possibly could. Like, a surprising amount of Apicius ones have honey in them somewhere. They love a sausage as well.
Yeah, but this is, I can't fault them.
Given a chance, they will chuck a bit of honey in just about anything.
Yeah.
And why not, I say.
Yeah, exactly. It's delicious.
Yeah. So that is basically considered to be vulgar food. There is this charming little letter from Pliny that I really like, where he is writing to his friend Sepiticus, who he invited to dinner, and then he didn't come.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't show up. And then later Pliny heard that he didn't show up because he went to somebody else's for dinner instead.
Oh no.
And so he writes this letter where he's
friendship,
like,
ended.
Right. It says, "You could have come to my party and we ate eggs and snails and spelt mixed with honey and snow. And we had a very classy comedian and a harp player and a reciter. And it was extremely lovely and delightful and high class. And you would have had a lovely time. But instead, you went out to dinner at a place that had Spanish dancing girls. And you ate sea urchins and sow uteruses and oysters." And so that is like the vulgar party that Pliny would never go to, because Pliny is like he's like the big old Tory of his time, basically. Like, if you popped him in today, he would think that everybody was ruining good high culture. He would complain about dumbing down a lot, for sure.
Yeah.
And he would only go to the opera. He's the Fraser Crane of his day. There we go.
Sure. Yep.
And he would be very grumpy about things. And he has this letter where he says he is doing work in Rome. And he's like, how do you think I could possibly get away with doing work at Rome? It's because everybody else is at the races and I'm not, because I hate the races. And I don't understand how anybody could possibly enjoy it. It's so loud and vulgar. And he just thinks he's better than everybody. And so a classy party,
mm-hmm.
your moral good party, is snails and eggs and spelt mixed with honey and snow.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the eggs and the honey sound fine. I mean, spelt's all right, but like, you gotta put something better with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The thing is, it doesn't say what he's doing with it.
Yeah.
Annoyingly. Like, is it, are you boiling the spelt? Are you, like, frying it? Are you, like, is it some kind of porridge?
What are you serving with it? Has it got a nice, like, tahini dressing,
mm-hmm.
or something? What's going on?
Yeah, exactly. Like, unclear what he's doing, but the snow makes it expensive for sure. But, yeah. But, so that would be a classy dish. Then we have these things in Apicius, which are more everyday foods. So a lot of what he talks about, or what this book talks about, is things that you would eat kind of on the go, or things that you would eat that are cooked but can be everyday kind of easy meals. So I suppose this is your Jamie Oliver meal.
Your Jamie Oliver 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one which is called Patina Cucidiana, which literally just means everyday dish.
Mm-hmm.
And automatically starts badly for me personally. Make a paste of stewed brains.
Ugh! Yeah, I'm not on board with that.
I mean, I think it then also gets worse. Season with pepper, cumin, laser, broth, thickened wine, milk and eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's stewed brains with loads of other liquids in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because broth, wine, milk and eggs, like that's damp.
That's a lot. That's a lot of...
That's a yeah, lot of liquids that you've added to quite a liquidy thing.
You're making some kind of soup at that point. Yeah,
and then you poach it over a weak fire or in a hot water bath.
How do you poach a liquid?
I assume you just kind of gently simmer it?
I guess. Or is it that like the brains are being poached in the liquid of all of those other things?
It's a paste then mixed with all of those. But they never give amounts.
Well, that makes it very difficult to replicate the recipe.
Yeah, it does make it quite challenging. So you just have to hope for the best. But what you've got there, like the heavily spiced, like quite a lot of stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that you just kind of chuck it all together and then mix it all up. It's pretty common foods.
Yeah.
And they do pretty much use every part of the, like there's not a lot that they don't use. Yeah, which is fun. But that's called an everyday dish. And you'd find that kind of custardy, maybe porridgey dish, they seem to like quite damp dishes quite often.
Yeah, easy on the teeth.
As someone who has an issue with textures, they revolt me to quite often.
Yeah, it does seem like it would be slimy.
There are a lot of things where you're just like, I feel unhappy that this is happening. Do you want another one that I've chosen at random, which is called boiled dinner?
Absolutely.
Pepper, fresh mint, celery, dry pennyroyal, cheese, pignolia nuts, honey, vinegar, broth, egg yolks, water, wet bread.
Okay.
More cheese, so this time cow cheese, and cucumbers.
Mm-hmm.
They're all layered, so one after another, with nuts. Finely chopped capers, chicken livers, and a lukewarm congealing broth.
It's too many things.
It's too many things. It's too many things.
It's too many things.
And then you kind of like cover that up and chill it. And then when it congeals into what I imagine to be kind of one of, almost like one of those 1950s gelatin desserts.
Yeah, like a salmon and aspic or something.
Unmold it and then serve it to people.
Yeah, I don't want that.
You don't want chicken liver and cucumber and cheese covered in nuts and broth and also some honey?
I mean... Look, it's not the worst thing we've heard about, but it just seems like they presented it in the most unappetizing way they could have, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. And this happens a lot. A surprising amount of the recipes, I will put a link to his entire book, which is available online and you can go through. And a surprising amount of them are just lists of things where you're just like, stop adding things. Like... Please, like pull back.
Yeah, you just lose the ability to imagine what it is because you've lost track of all the things that are in it.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty terrible a lot of the time. But all of these are still, because they include things which are definitely imported, like pepper. As soon as you see pepper, you know that they're talking about rich people food because pepper is imported from Asia.
Right.
And so pepper is expensive and is not something that everyday people eat. And so as soon as you see something like that, and as soon as you see something that involves ice as well, that is not something that, as I'm sure you can imagine, is that people had in large quantities in Rome during a period of global warming that was happening.
Yeah.
It's not notoriously an icy place now. But that is certainly something that they use for rich people. But very pleasingly, we have all of these archaeological sites that have survived well enough that their sewer systems and bins have survived.
Oh, so we can go through their trash.
Yeah, and rubbish is just the best way to find out what people were actually doing. So like everyday people, what were they throwing away? We also have in Pompeii and Herculaneum toilets.
So we can see how people were shitting?
Yes, we can.
That's horrible.
I know, but it's very useful. Because archaeologists can go through the toilets, can go through the sewage, can go through the rubbish pits at Pompeii and Herculaneum. And also in Ostia, and can see what people actually ate. Because you see these cookbooks, which are clearly written for like the 1%. Like,
yeah,
there's the Heston Blumenthals of their time.
Mm.
And this is not things that people are eating on an everyday basis. And we have pictures of food, but very often those pictures of food are also from people who can afford to draw pictures of food. So like, if you can afford to paint some food, like stuff on your wall, then you automatically, like there was that thing that came out of Pompeii last year. I don't know if you saw it, where everyone was like, oh, it's the first pizza. It looks like a pizza.
I did not see this.
This is where I realized that obviously I'm heavily embedded in the world of like news of stuff that comes out of Pompeii. It was a fresco. Let me find it for you.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that does kind of look like a small pizza.
Yes.
A very bready pizza.
A heavily bready pizza.
Yeah.
And it looks like a kind of bit of flatbread with some stuff on it.
With some stuff on it.
Yeah.
A globule of something that could be a mozzarella ball, but probably isn't.
Mozzarella did not exist.
Yeah, there you go. It's not mozzarella.
But it might be some kind of cheese, but it equally, knowing the Romans, could be a nut.
Yep.
There is definitely what looks like some kind of pomegranate on there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and a leaf. So yeah, it looks like bread and fruit.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much what people eat. But that is a fresco that is on a house. And so it is a rich person's version of their food, basically. And there are also like in Ostia, which is just outside of Rome and is my favorite place to go. There are these carvings of people selling like vegetables and things.
Mm-hmm.
But they nonetheless you have to have the money to be able to show off that. And there has to be some kind of decision behind why you have decided to show that.
Yeah, so it's not representative. It's not what ordinary people are doing.
But what you can't lie about is what's in your poo. And so from Pompeii and Herculaneum, from like a couple of different studies that have been done, what you mostly find are grains and pulses.
Okay.
Which is very unsurprising, I suspect. Yeah. So mostly barley and wheat, which can be mostly found in bread. Like,
okay.
Obviously,
yeah, sure.
Bread everywhere. Bread is the main staple food of the West for most of time.
I feel like this is something that I feel like the food universals are like beer or some sort of alcohol, flatbread, and like little dumplings, parcels of meat in it that are wrapped in a thing. Humans seem to invent those everywhere.
Yeah.
Which I think is great because all of those things are great.
All of those things are delicious. I love dumplings. I love bread. I love wine. So beer gives me a headache, but So we find lots and lots of barley and wheat, which is probably bread, but also could be kind of porridges as well. There is this bit in Galen where he talks about some road diggers feeding him boiled barley and it giving him massive indigestion and also constipation and being very unhappy about it. But apparently that is something that people did. It sounds awful, which is fair, but definitely some like then. And this is where you start to see that Italian, this is all Italy that I'm talking about here. This is like Rome. Italian food prior to like the 14th century, 15th century was not dissimilar to like the food of what is now like the Levant and southern Mediterranean food, because we get lots of lentils, lots of chickpeas, lots of beans, and peas. They love peas. And so heavy on lentils. We know they make chickpea fritters from elsewhere, and they love a lentil stew.
Okay.
And they love broad beans.
Interesting.
Loads and loads of broad beans.
Okay. I mean, fair enough.
Yeah. So lots of those things. Lots of peas. God, I love peas. Then nuts you find loads of. Walnuts, pine nuts, and hazelnuts mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're delicious. And some almonds.
Okay.
And then there are lots of fruits.
Sure. I mean, this all sounds fine. This all sounds perfectly delicious.
So the obvious ones, the ones that you find in huge, huge quantities, pretty much everywhere in the entirety of the Mediterranean, are olives, grapes, and figs.
Mm-hmm.
87% of the seeds in one of the studies from Pompeii that I looked at were from figs.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, sure. That seems unsurprising.
Because they're sweet and delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, olives, obviously, everywhere. Olive oil is a huge staple product. Olives are a staple food. Grapes, obviously, grow everywhere, all over Italy. But then apples and pears are very common.
Okay.
Interestingly, I learned recently that apples and pears have both been like genetically engineered or bred to make that sound slightly less dystopian. But like they've been specific, like that's what genetic engineering is mostly. Yeah. Like it's just selective breeding.
Yeah.
They've been selectively bred over the past like couple of centuries to be much, much sweeter than they used to be.
Oh, okay. So,
and so
they,
apples
they used to be more of a tart thing.
Yeah, much more kind of acidic.
Mm.
And less sweet, more so, yeah, so not the apples that we are used to.
Mm.
But for sweetness, they have peaches, they have cherries, they have blackberries, and they have melon.
Okay. I have no complaints about any of this. This is a perfectly fine diet that
it
I would enjoy.
It's all good. Then meat and fish you find in bones, and they also find kind of remnants of, but we have chicken and goose.
Mm-hmm.
Lamb, pork, eel,
mm-hmm.
loads and loads and loads of different types of fish, like just loads. Fish that I've never even heard of, but like a little fish like sardines and things like that. And then loads of shellfish. So limpets and mussels and scallops and cockles and oysters and crab and lobster and sea urchin.
So, sea urchin, that's interesting. I can't see that one. It is interesting that like when you read about food that's being eaten by the fancy lads, that's where you get all the, oh my God, that's disgusting. I can't believe they ate that. And when you look at the evidence of what ordinary people ate, it's like, yeah, this is fine. This seems fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when they find the herbs and spices, like that's the herb seeds that they found. It's harder to find spices because they don't like really tend to survive in seed form. But dill, fennel, coriander, mint, poppy, and mustard seeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which sounds grand.
It does. It sounds brilliant. No, I would be happy with any of this if it was served to me, which is, I cannot say for the posh food.
See, where if somebody came at you with a dormouse stuffed with dormouse or a sow's belly stuffed with whatever, or a boneless chicken disguised as a goose or whatever, you'd kind of recoil. But that is like your Michelin starred weirdo restaurant.
Yeah, I've always had a deep suspicion of delicacies, you know?
But they're usually gross in a way of demonstrating kind of cultural superiority.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not about them. And I feel very justified in their opinion right now.
Yeah. Yeah, because you could just be eating some lentils and some bread with some, you know, nice nuts and a fig.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, like, basically the core foods of the Mediterranean diet are wheat, lentils and chickpeas, grapes, figs, and olives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
which is not a bad time. Interestingly, you will note that there's not actually that many vegetables in there.
Mm-hmm.
You have fruits, but you do not have that many vegetables. And I have a theory that this is because vegetables are actually very hard to grow in any kind of mass way before the world of nitrogen-based fertilizers, which were invented in the 1920s.
Yeah.
Actually extremely hard to grow vegetables. And so they turn up in the fancy foods.
Okay.
Where they talk about buying vegetables and they talk about cucumbers and they talk about leeks and things, but and pumpkins and whatever. But they do not turn up in that much in the studies of what people were actually eating in archaeobiology, which is interesting to me. And so I think that people did not eat that many vegetables because they are hard to grow and not nutritionally that dense.
Right. So fruit, you just bang up a tree.
Yeah.
But veggies are a bit more involved.
Yeah, because apples, pears, figs, you grow one tree, you can get hundreds. I don't know if you've ever had an apple tree in your garden, but they're a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, no, we had little, when I was a kid, we had a little tiny little grove of trees in our garden. It was great. That apples were always tiny and like not particularly sweet, but
yeah, you know, did you end
we
up
didn't do anything with it because we just left it alone.
See, we had a big apple tree in one of the houses that I grew up in, and it would only fruit every 2 years, but when it did, it would rain apples down upon us, and we would end up having to go to all of our neighbors or like put a massive like bucket of apples outside of our front door and be like, please take these apples away.
That is what happens in New Zealand with a fruit called feijoas, which a feijoa is very good. It's a very mild flavor, but they're delicious. And they are, everyone just has a tree and they are only in season for like a couple of weeks, maybe a month at most, and they go bad pretty quickly. So and they can't be cultivated outside that period. So like you can buy them, but there's kind of, the market isn't that strong because everyone has them in their backyards or know someone. And so you end up this in like March, people just carrying massive supermarket bags of feijoas everywhere they go and being like, please take them from me.
Exactly.
Because they rot really quickly. So if you don't eat them, then they're gone.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and they're, you know, fruit basically grows itself a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You've got one apple tree, you've got 80 billion apples. You've got one grapevine, you've got 4 billion grapes. Like, whereas vegetables are very finickety. You have to tend to them constantly. If you plant one lettuce seed, you get one single lettuce from it.
Yep.
And you have to hope that snails didn't eat it all before you get there.
Yeah.
Because if you're not tending it constantly, then the snails will eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not that easy to produce for urban consumers before
nitrogen-based
fertilizers, which changed the world. Do you want to hear a good fact about nitrogen-based fertilizers?
Of course I do.
The guy who invented nitrogen-based fertilizer also invented chlorine gas.
Oh, wow.
Before the First World War. And he regretted one of those inventions. Which one do you think it was? It was not chlorine gas, which he thought was fine. He had persistent nightmares about the invention of nitrogen fertilizers because he worried that he might have made vegetables take over the world.
That's amazing.
Yep. And he would have dreams that the world would be completely taken over by green produce because he had made it too easy to grow vegetables. And that's a good story.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's why, that's my theory as to why you do not find that many vegetables.
Yeah.
And also I have tried to grow vegetables and they're a bastard.
Yeah. So fruit is better.
Yeah, but you do find people selling vegetables because you do get street sellers, and we do hear of vegetable sellers occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But more often we hear of bread sellers, sausage sellers, and people selling cakes.
Sure. I mean, I do prefer all of those things to vegetables.
Yeah.
If I'm honest.
So Seneca has this thing where he says that cake sellers, pastry, pastry, like, bakers and sausage sellers all will, like, walk around the streets and shout and try to sell you their wares. So you could buy a sausage and a pastry and walk around and have a what frankly sounds like a great day.
That does sound like a great day.
Or a chickpea fritter.
Oh, yum.
There's also this one story, which I think is from Pliny, about buying an egg on the street and eating it on the way home from the baths. And it's really unclear to me as to whether it's a raw egg that you just knock back.
Or like a hard-boiled egg or something.
Hard-boiled egg. And I suspect it might just be an egg.
But then you wouldn't eat it on the way. You just knock it. Like, you don't nibble at a raw egg.
No. But you can knock a raw egg back very quickly on your way.
But
just like, if you're
eating, but that's not eating it on the way back, you know. So for that reason, I'm coming down on the side of hard-boiled.
I think I maybe just quite like the image of somebody like taking the top off of a raw egg and then sipping
a little straw.
Like, just taking little sips of egg. It disgusts me, but I think I just that image pleases me. And so I'm going to insist on believing that that continues. Like, you just take your little shot of egg.
That's fine. I won't take that away from you.
Yeah. So that's food. So I'm now going to do briefly what they drank.
Okay.
Which is a surprising amount of things that they have, because obviously wine is their big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they have tons of different types of wine. Mostly wine should be drunk mixed with water.
Mm-hmm.
Always. But they have white wine and red wine.
Mm-hmm.
They have spiced wine and sweet wine. So there is this wine that has like pepper added to it.
Oh.
Which is like kind of a spicy wine called Conditum.
So spiced wine doesn't mean like mulled wine. It means like chili wine.
Genuinely spicy wine. Yep.
Interesting.
But so it is, I'll give you the recipe if you want. Yeah. So you get a bronze jar, you put in mm-hmm. some wine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 2 parts wine to 6 parts honey.
Okay. That's a lot of honey. You're basically drinking honey with a hint of wine.
Yeah. And then you boil that until it kind of reduces down a little bit. Then you add 4 ounces of pepper, a bay leaf and some saffron,
mm-hmm.
a couple of dates, and then a load more wine.
Oh, okay. So you do make mulled wine like that sometimes. You like use a little bit of wine to make a paste of, but like of sweet spices, obviously not savory ones.
Yeah.
And then you just mix that into the wine proper.
Yeah.
I will forgive that original ratio of wine to honey.
Yeah. The modern like recipe for it, where somebody has kind of reverse engineered it as much as they can, is like a bottle of white wine with a load of honey and some dates and some pepper and fennel.
Mm-hmm.
2 bay leaves and some saffron, which I think is probably made nicer than the actual thing is. But so that's a spiced wine. Then they have like a kind of Albus, which is a light white wine, and then Fulvus, which is golden.
Mm-hmm.
Then Sanguinus, which is a like a Beaujolais, like a sweetish kind of light red wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then one called Niger, which is a thick, dark, aged red wine, of which the fanciest is called Falernian wine. If you ever see a Roman talking about Falernian wine, then they are talking about something very fancy indeed, like the most expensive aged 100-year-old wine.
Okay.
Then they have raisin wine, which is like Retsina.
Mm-hmm. I don't really know what Retsina is, but okay.
It's a very, very sweet wine. Like a dessert wine.
Okay.
Yeah, like just unbelievably sugary. I'm like, I don't like them at all.
Yeah, it sounds a bit much.
Yeah. They also drink a lot of milk.
Mm-hmm.
So they particularly like to drink sheep and goat milk, but they will also drink cow, donkey and camel milk.
Occasionally, camel milk tastes uh-huh. like. I feel like it would be very strong. I don't know why I think that.
A very, very long time. I'm going to show my age here. Then you won't know, but there used to be a program on BBC Two at lunchtimes called This Morning with Richard and Not Judy, which was Richard Herring, Stuart Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very silly show, but they had a skit where Richard Herring would try different types of milk, be like whale milk and beaver milk and camel milk, makes me think of that.
Yeah, that sounds Dangerous.
Yeah. They only drank pig milk for medicinal reasons, though.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They have this thing called melka, which is fermented sheep or goat milk mixed with fresh milk and then mm-hmm. flavoured with garum.
Okay.
So, which sounds, I have to say, awful.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It really does.
Like, I don't know if I want a savoury milk shake.
No, I know. I know that I do not. I absolutely don't want that.
Mm. Then a thing called alaka, which is kind of like kvass, like kind of yogurty alcoholic drink. It's mm-hmm. made from spelt and water.
Okay.
They have mulsum, which is a real honey sweet wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like fizzy pop, like their version of a Coca-Cola is called Posca,
mm-hmm.
which is water and red wine vinegar.
Yeah, that doesn't sound amazing.
It's surprisingly nice.
Yeah?
Yes, because the vinegar, like it's, if you do like, as if you were making like a Ribena.
Okay.
And it's like a dash of red wine vinegar and then water. It kind of is almost fizzy.
Okay.
And sometimes they would put like a little bit of sweetener, like a little bit of honey in it. But it's actually surprisingly refreshing.
Interesting.
Mm.
I don't think I'm going to try it.
That's fair. But that's what you drink if you're like real hot in the street. Mm-hmm. You get a Posca. I know that people sold this, like there were street vendors where you could go and get like a glass of Posca because mm-hmm. there's this story of a guy who's, it's one of the emperors, I think it's Vitellius maybe, who he has this enslaved guy who is like his pet, who he rapes all the time and he runs away. Mm-hmm. And manages to make a life for himself as a Posca seller, but then he is caught and sent back.
Ah, that's a tragic tale.
It is. A lot of Roman stories are tragic tales.
Yeah. Because they did insist on, you know, capturing people and raping them, which is not
they
ideal.
They do that a surprising amount of the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Like all of them are doing that. And they're horrible people.
Yeah.
Yeah, buy my books about them. Yeah, so that's what the Romans ate.
Yeah, yeah. Like all of the gross stuff is just for being fancy. And
it's just rich people shit, yeah.
That's really a relief. Yeah. You know?
Most of them were just eating normal things and sometimes sipping on an egg.
Yeah, that seems fine.
Yeah. Yeah, so good for the Romans, I say. And I quite want a chickpea fritter.
Yeah, that sounds delicious.
Yeah. I do not really want anything they've ever cooked because it does feel like they're going to put some honey in it.
I don't mind honey in things.
I don't mind honey in things. I just don't love it when I'm eating a savoury food and they've put some honey in it.
Depends on the savoury food, I think. Sometimes a little bit of honey in a thing can add a little something something.
Maybe. Mm. I distrust it.
What are we talking about next time?
Next time we're back closer to the modern world and some more horrible people. And this question is from Julian Cosson, who said, how big a dickhead was Napoleon III?
It's a very good question.
It is. So I'm excited to find out how big a dickhead Napoleon III was.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite a big one.
Yeah.
From what I know, quite big.
Yeah, I think it's going to end up being like substantially.
Yeah. So we'll find out next time.
Yeah.
And if you'd like to ask us a question, where can you go, Janina?
You can go to historysexy.com where you can fill out the wee form that emails us your question. And you can also buy merch, which one of the we are going to refresh at some point.
I'm going to do that this week. Yes. And buy us a coffee if you would like to. And I'm going to say a thank you to all of the people who regularly buy us a coffee because we appreciate you very much. And we have a couple of new people. So thank you to Bevin, Dave, Anna, Sandra, Sarah, Neve, Connor, Franzi, John, Ed, Joanna, Ida, Emily, Amanda, and the two people who have decided to remain anonymous and just call themselves Kofi Supporter.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
If you wish to update that so that your name is there, I will thank you next time. And I am working on something to send to the people who support us regularly. So if you would like to one day receive something in the post from me, then you can join and give us £3 a month. And if not, you can just buy us a coffee and we will appreciate you.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, thank you to everybody who does that. We do appreciate you very much.
We do.
But until next time, Janina. Bye.
Bye.